I believe that knowing your unique value proposition comes from truly understanding your unique strengths, which tells me and you how a person does what they do, and then they need to understand their career story.
Hello and welcome back to another Leads to Growth podcast. My name is Christopher McCoy. I'm your host here with the National Association of Sales Professionals, and you know, we asked for women of sales and influence to come give us a hand here and represent, and we've got a powerful woman of influence here. Gina Riley, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. That's a nice intro.
Absolutely. You know, Gina's got a great story for us, y'all. And I love bringing on guests that bring different perspectives. We've had a lot of people in a certain array of arenas, but with the job market going the way it is right now, We really started to search for some of the people who could help us with a lot of our executive placement, a lot of people moving from career to career. And lo and behold, we attracted a power player. Gina has had a career in corporate America, operating in recruiting, and but also an Intel Corporation. She's human resource partner, training and development. So she was a part of training and developing people over at the groups over at Intel and executives and whatnot. And then she became an executive search consultant. So then she became a hunter for those great leaders. And now she's helping those great leaders and executives find positions. So she's played all sides of the fences, the hiring person, the person helping you get the gig, and the person getting the gig. So Gina, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. I love that term, the hunter.
Well, you know, we used to call sales hunting, but I think recruitment is might have taken the position there. But Gina is career transition coach and career velocity system creator. She's been on her own rocking this for 3 or 4 years now, Gina.
Yeah, that's about right.
Awesome. I love it. So tell me first how you made tell me about your work at Intel. So it's very interesting. I love the 360 degree of this industry that you have, and being on the inside at Intel, how did that set you up for your career, the where you're at today?
Yes, I am very grateful for my time at Intel. I spent about a decade there, working my way from, hiring for the fabs here in Oregon, getting on as a recruiter. I was a part of the ramp, went back, remember the Pentium? I was a part of hiring hundreds of college graduates. I ran the intern program. I personally hired about 500 plus people in 1 year to, you know, do the summer programs and the co-ops and whatnot. And then I really found that I wanted to be an HR business partner. I wanted to be at the side of one of the leaders and, you know, coaching, guiding the business group from an HR perspective. And at that time, you were not able to land those jobs without a master's degree. So I went off and got myself a degree in whole systems design, which is, has given me a perspective of all the moving parts to people and processes and organizations. So I landed in the role that I wanted. I served an incredible upcoming VP and incredible leadership team. And then I segued into a training and development role, which if you had asked my 15, 16-year-old self what I wanted to do with my life, I wanted to be a trainer. I wanted to help people learn things that would empower them in their lives, specifically to help them communicate better and build better relationships. So I landed in that job. And then I had my second son, and my husband and I were fortunate enough for me to be able to take 15 years off and be the shepherd to 2 squirrely boys. and I was very involved in my community, and I, you know, there's all those kinds of stories. But essentially, I worked my way back in by one of my friends runs Talents Group. It's an executive search company. Doing some program management work for her, helping her with her interview skills training. We deliver training on site to teach managers and leaders how to craft effective questions. How do you identify talent? All the ins and outs of behavioral and competency-based interviews. And then essentially moved into the career transition coaching because the expertise that I have on the side of the interviewer, I see all the mistakes people make. right?
Oh, that leads me to one of the questions I just had baked in, ready to go. Tell me, what are two or three? I had to take that segue. What are two or three of the biggest mistakes that you see executives make when transitioning with their resume or even just moving on to the next position?
Oh gosh, there's so many. So I'm going to go off the top of my head.
Perfect.
One is, the first thing is they don't have their unique value proposition ready. Mm. And I'm not saying you have to come up with a one-line branding statement, because I think that that creates a lot of anxiety for people. Like, I have to come up with one sentence that's going to tell everybody how I deliver. And I don't believe that to be true. I believe that knowing your unique value proposition comes from truly understanding your unique strengths, which tells me and you how a person does what they do. And then they need to understand their career story. If you ask anybody, like, well, I know my story, I could talk to you about that all day. That's problem number two, is rambling.
Ooh.
The biggest challenge people have is not succinctly telling each of their interview stories. Mm. It's terrible. So if you haven't prepared how you address problems and issues within your company in a succinct, targeted way, in a way that shows some EQ and shows that you can read into the questions that are being asked of you and navigate those waters, you bore your audience.
I love that. I love that. That is brilliant. You know,
that
the first
two, I could go two. On and on.
Oh yeah, no, we'll come back. But I love the art of storytelling. We just had David Hutchins on. He sent me this great deck here, this leadership storytelling deck, and it's all different cards on telling your story. And what a powerful tool storytelling is. And also being conscious of your value proposition, as you said. We just had podcast with Shelley Phillips not too long ago in a training with her about your unique selling proposition, you know, that personal branding version of your of that, and how important it is to know it concisely, you said. Mm-hmm. Right, and then to be able to share it to others in stories. This is sales and influence, everyone. What happens is people forget that this is a talent. They use power manipulation, they use fear, they use all these things, but they forget that this is a tactful, fun, playful game of social psychology. And what a beautiful reminder, Gina.
Yes, I listened to that episode with Shelley. It was excellent. And it really resonated with me, because the coexistence of not only your brand and what you're putting forward and what people know, like, and trust you for, that is intertwined with the confidence that you bring in telling the stories in the first place. So when I'm working with leaders, sometimes they're coming up from a place of dog down. They've had this incredible career and they know that they have big wins, but they can't tap into the confidence to tell the stories because maybe they've been out of work just long enough that they're looking around going, well, where's my network? And why aren't people calling me? You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a very vulnerable position, I would imagine, for executives. How do you help them find that belief, find those stories?
The way that I start is I use an assessment tool called the UMAP. Okay. It's four assessments in one. There's plenty of assessments out there. There's a very specific reason I use this. It's a holistic tool that's going to immediately tell me what someone's top five strengths are. That's how they do what they do. It's their natural talents that they came to the planet with. I get to understand what their values are and how it would relate to them choosing their next job. Because if their values are in misalignment, that's the thing that keeps people up at night. You get a stomach ache, you hate your job. So if you're not clear on those, I reduce it to three. And I don't say all your values are not relevant. I just want to know the three that are relevant in the way that you choose your job. I find out what skills really motivate them and the ones that burn them out, and I understand their personality. And I start unpacking that so I can help them truly see what makes them special and unique. And I'm going to quote the author of UMAP and the creator of the tool. She says, you can't read the label when you're inside of the jar. And so what the UMAP does is gives you words and language that are specific to you. And I help people unpack that. And then I actually spend about 5 hours creating a synthesis of all that information in their words, in the words they give me during our debrief, so that it's truly reflective of them.
I absolutely love that. It's so, y'all, and it's so funny. Our audience must be sitting here going, she's using their words. Do they prep on this stuff before the podcast? But it's principle. And this is why I love attracting amazing people to this podcast, because the amazing people that we bring on are principally based, right? The style is different. The flavor is different. Like she said, there's a many assessments that I could get out there. The reason why this one is purposeful for this situation is because this one helps. So it provides a mirror for you to see your greatest self and probably provides you a good process to get there. Whereas you probably don't want people to get too vulnerable at this moment because you want them to start earning their confidence. And that's kind of maybe the opposite direction sometimes. But I really love the process and values. How important are values? Because you said something on your page that you talked about of having people not just choose the next job, but choose their the rest of their future career. Tell me more about that.
Well, sure. I mean, being aligned with your core values as it relates to choosing that next job, it's oftentimes about some very core beliefs that we have in the way that we operate in the world, whether that's trust, whether that's autonomy, whether that's freedom. And so as we're scoping out our future career choices, we need to make sure that we can live within that sweet spot. One of my best stories, one of my favorite ones, is I have a teammate at Talents Group. I did the UMAP with all my teammates, which helped me understand them better and what makes them tick. And it's a really beautiful process because it helps us relate better. So one of my teammates, her top three is freedom. Okay, so freedom might mean something different to you and me, and it's not in my top three necessarily. So what does it mean to her? It means don't put me in a box. Don't fence me in with the exact way I have to do my work. Give me the freedom to figure things out and use the processes that work for me. How important and informative is that for her to put words on it, but for the owner of Talents Group, who's the leader, to know, oh, I'm going to get more out of you. I'm going to get your best self if I understand that freedom is in your top three.
It's so beautiful. Our sister company Envision You, that does our corporate consulting, we have a process called the ISMS process. And we help people identify their culture, their ideal culture, and or where they're at right now in their ideal culture. Mm-hmm. And then based on that ideal culture, we help them identify the values that align with that culture. And we have everybody in the company go through that process to decide on those. And we come up with a word, the value, but then the definition is so important because, as you said,
yes.
Language is often a symbol to us. It symbolizes something, and it speaks to us in words and references that we don't hear, that aren't written down and exchanged when the word is said. And so it's very important to get down with that. And also, Gina, I love that too, because the process is so beautiful, because when you go after something, you're basically teaching influence and sales here in the most beautiful way.
I am?
Yes. And so the idea is know your client aligns with you. Know that you have the service and the value to offer that client or prospect. Know that you are the executive can offer the value to that company. And how much more confident do you relay who you are and why you are that way in that interview and conversation?
Absolutely. And you said something very key, and that is you need to define the value for yourself. And if you're going to have conversations with people, you need to explain what it means to you. Otherwise, we're operating off of assumptions, which is dangerous. When I had done a team development using the UMAP, it was a small marketing team, four people. We unpacked all of this, got it up on poster paper, you know, old school style pre-pandemic, and had everyone's strengths up, everyone's values. And when that team got a chance to hear what everything meant, and they started to see what strengths they could leverage, and they started to see the burnout skills from this UMAP process, right? Yeah. They started to see, oh, I love doing that skill. I could take that off your plate and you could do this instead. And there was some negotiation. Or I see that you value these three things. Oh dear, I've been rubbing against you the wrong way and causing friction because I didn't understand that was a deeply held value that I was bumping up against.
That's beautiful. And it goes to another program that we have. It's called ACE, Attitude, Competency, and Effort. And it's an experience between the manager, you know, and the one reporting to that person. And the idea is that you list your values and attitude, you list your values and competency and effort, and then you compare. As the employee, I put my score, and you as the superior put your score. And then we talk about the gap. Why is there a gap? Oh, I didn't know you did this. Oh, I didn't know you do this. I didn't know you thought that that was what, you know, and it's really clarification of these expectations, and it's clear communication. And so when an executive is making that shift, they're bringing their family along. Oftentimes they're leaving something that was successful. There's a lot of ego involved. This is bigger than probably buying a house and buying a car for them, you know? And so it's so important to align those beliefs, those values, so that when they do get to that next place, now they're confident that they got what they want as well.
Absolutely.
I love that. And so you really learned how often have you seen that process go wrong where you were on the other side, maybe placement or hiring, and you brought somebody in, but maybe didn't find out that the values weren't aligned ahead of time? Have you seen that happen in the experience?
Of course, I've seen bad hires, but you know, if I'm going to be reflecting more back a little bit too far in my rear view mirror,
sure.
I would say that because of what we know and we teach, like from the talents group perspective on how to assess talent, we're bringing to the forefront the things that get in our way and cloud our ability to choose the right people. Mm. And so, you know, that's everything from, you know, tapping into and making ourselves aware of biases that we have and so on. But if we craft effective questions that help people tell their stories in ways that showcase their values without asking them what their value is. Mm. We don't ask like, how do you lead people? We ask questions about their competencies and like the things they get done. And we listen for how they do it, which shows up in their strengths. And it shows their leadership approach, right? Yes. And it also shows us their EQ. Can they read the room? Can they read people? Do they show up with empathy? Do they show up with decisiveness and humility?
Sure. So
I don't know if I answered your question.
No, beautifully, because I believe what you did, what you said is those who aren't experienced with the skills of the questions and know what to listen for are those who could experience those challenges.
Yes. You can make a bad hire. And you know, a lot of the fault is on the company who chooses not to train anyone that interviews people. Because what do? We, you know, we're busy. Let's say something comes up and then we throw a peer into an interview. Now, what is the peer doing? They go into the interview and they take the resume and they go, "So, Chris, tell me about yourself." And then walk me through your resume. That person has already been through how many screens going through their resume? We should be assessing skills at this moment by the time someone is in-house, right? So we get it wrong time and again. And it's because we're lazy, we're busy, and we don't create a focus because we don't find it to be super valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. I read a book, I think it's called The Power of When. And it talks about just how we are throughout the day. I think it was Daniel Pink maybe wrote the book. And he talked about those who go in for parole. And those who go in the morning to see the judge have like a 50, 60 or 70% more likely chance to be released on parole. Oh. Those who get the judge after lunch, after he's had a day of dealing with 100 people and this and that and all the excuses, No. So after lunch, you're automatically, especially right after lunch too, it's like a 100% more likely. And so the idea is, when do these interviews often happen? Who is the person? And you said something very interesting to me, bias. I remember being in an interview process, being the person interviewing. And I remember thinking, I don't even know why I'm asking these questions. I already know how I feel. And I'm like, wow, that's very interesting. And it wasn't, you know, but I was being honest with myself. I was like, I'm asking questions to confirm my bias. I was realizing that the questions I asked weren't relevant. They were only relevant to my feelings. Mm-hmm. And because I want to feel like I made a good decision when I'm done. I want to feel, and I think when we're not aware of those things, it can be a real problem. So having you on the other side, I'll bet is a very big advantage for a firm hiring as well, knowing that they went through a coach who helped them align these beliefs, who helped them align these values and really go to that next position. Are you seeing a big growth in the market, a big shift in the market with people, executives moving around right now? They've been all over the news. I mean, look what happened in Starbucks, just had a big shift. We had Pinterest as well, and then someone else, but a lot of executives.
I think what we see is some serious executive burnout. And, you know, yes. I'm working with executives. I'm married to an executive. What I understand when I look at the whole landscape is there's a lot of just leader bashing overall. And, you know, you get on LinkedIn and it's coach after coach going, you know, leaders should do this, you know, hire me because I'm going to tell you how to lead. And it's just, you could scroll for days. Here's the thing. Yes, leaders get paid a lot of money to do what they do, but if you're the CEO, it is the loneliest job. It is. And there's so many factors that are affecting them all day long, all night long when they can't sleep, you name it. So I do think that there's going to be some churn just with the sort of come to Jesus moments that people are having post pandemic and looking at their priorities, or maybe they're just burnt where they are and they'll find another leadership role elsewhere and start fresh. They need to shed the baggage that they've been, these CEOs and other leaders are carrying on their backs the weight and the emotion and the mental health of their people and trying to keep businesses alive and doors open. So am I seeing an influx in my coaching work for career transition? Not necessarily, because there's always going to be some leaders. There's always going to be people in transition. There's always going to be mergers and acquisitions and people lose a job because there's two VPs of marketing, you know, stuff happens, but, and then on the side where I do some consulting for Talents Group, we've been very busy. It was quieter during the pandemic. We were busy. We had everybody was working, but you know, once things started to loosen up, holy Moses, you know, it's like, okay, there's a lot happening.
Yeah. And I think you said the correct word, you're right. It's the burnout that's increasing. And you're right. A lot of my executive friends who, you know, have just walked away from companies and in positions and said, you know, we're going to take a month or two off and then, you know, we'll go find another gig later on, or maybe we'll move somewhere. I think a lot of them also are like, you know, this location and time isn't good for my family anymore. There are actually billboards here in Austin that say, keep Austin weird. And it says weird as in high cost of living. And then it says on the side, Ohio. And it is a whole campaign by how there's like 20 of them here in Austin. And it's a campaign for those who are burnt out and ready to move to the country or somewhere outside of the city so that they can, because what happens is it's the burnout, it's not just from work and everything. It's the cost of living goes up. It's the turning all the wheels. And so, and it's very interesting that you're aligning with these executives realigning on their values and beliefs again. That's just very, very interesting to me how lost you can become as an executive in that burnout process. All right, Gina, I love all of this. So tell me what lights you up. This is what is your purpose and mission, your why behind doing all this work?
I would say that since I was about 15 or 16, I got exposed to personal and leadership development programs. I was involved in a couple different things in high school, and it exposed me to big time motivational speakers. And that was the catalyst to me, my awakening to what I wanted to do. So I know a lot of people have a lot of twists and turns in their career. I truly have a slightly more straight line because what I'm driven to do and my why is really helping other people who want the help. Communicate more clearly and relate to other people more effectively because they have sharpened what they want to say, what they need to say, getting to the bottom of things that aren't said, looking deeply into that and helping people bring that forward. That's what I'm driven to do. And one of my top strengths really plays to that effect. Out of my top three, number three is individualization. So if you're familiar with StrengthsFinder, it is the ability to really customize and individualize and see each person as a distinct individual. And I really pay attention to, you know, whatever the cues are, you know, where people are from, the things that they say and whatnot. And I drive that into how I work with people. And so that's underneath my why. I think if we effectively communicate with each other, we can build bridges, We can close gaps. We can understand each other better. We don't have to agree all the time, but we can certainly at least seek to understand and stop making so many assumptions.
Ah, seek to understand. Oh, that is just, I think that's that so simply put, you know, that I think that's such the rule for happiness in life too. Seeking to understand, being curious. This is a quality that we've often abandoned, you know, imagination, these beautiful creative qualities that made us childlike and that allowed us to feel this freedom and fun are the things that we abandon for work-life balance and for, you know, long days. And you see the rest of the world too, going to four-day work weeks. And yeah. I mean, look at Spain and half of Europe. I mean, it just even like working with my friends over there, like y'all are on siesta already? Like, come on. But it's, and you look at the, you know, the quality of life in other places and you look at and it's, you know, there's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. And I believe that we are in a beautiful cycle of hopefully evolving out of that stress to excel type environment. How are you seeing the workforces evolving with this post-COVID in and out of the office type thing? You know, I think one of the big things that I heard the CEO from Starbucks, the interim CEO for what's the founder of Starbucks's name? I can't remember, save my life right now. But anyways, he's been the interim CEO like 4 or 5 times, 10 years at a time sometimes. But he's just pleading with people like, please come back to the office. Please, I'll do push-ups. I'll do whatever you want. But how are you seeing these offices changing or the workspace is changing or the work-life work from home experience going for people now?
Yeah, I think for me, my visibility tangibly is a little bit limited in that I'm typically working with a lot of people who are already in transition. I get their stories about their workforce that way and or whatever I'm reading on the landscape. With the people that I'm currently working with, I am hearing the burnout. I'm also hearing that they want people to come back too because they appreciate the relationships that they build, but people are pretty happy actually being at home. So how do you bridge those gaps? And then how do you effectively build teams that know and trust each other to work together? So I think that we're going to see some challenging cultures, and that's what the leaders will be navigating and then figuring out, you know, an effective way to bring people together, you know, in a hybrid situation.
I completely agree. It is, you know, Zappos and Google and all these campuses were built to create these random exchanges and interactions, and you no longer have those anymore. You don't have the co-workings, and it went to the one direction, right? It was like, okay, now I'm just working at a company because they have Capri Suns, Red Bulls, and pool tables, and right, and they didn't accomplish what they were supposed to accomplish. But the idea is now, oh, we've lost all that. Now we're like, oh, we really miss it. And I think that is, you're going to start to see more retreats, more events. I think you're going to start to see, you know, a lot of that corporate team building in different ways. Mm-hmm. It's got to evolve some way because you can't just have two parties like, no, yes, no, yes. I mean, if you are a stickler for your way, you're going to lose out on a huge talent pool.
Yeah. You know, you just made me think of something I hadn't thought of before, which is, do you know who's going to also lose in this whole scenario? So it's the worker. Let's say it's the workers who are enjoying being at home for a lot of great reasons, working parents, and maybe you're taking care of older parents. Who knows, right? But I'll tell you who's going to lose out long term. It's people who need to be in the office building relationships and networking in order to find their next job, even if it's internal. Whether or not it's external, if you're not building these relationships, I work with leaders who are from some of the biggest companies on the planet. And when they get to a point where they are let go on a mass layoff and then they're sent to an outplacement service for 6 months of like standardized help, they realize, oh my Lord, I've just come out of one of the largest companies in the whole wide world, but I don't have a network, because the network you're tapping back into either work inside, they don't have a job for you, and their network is limited outside. And now you're competing against all your leader peers across the world from the same company.
Yeah.
That is a problem. So if you're not interacting with people one way or the other. You don't figure out how to build relationships through networking. Networking is not a dirty word. It's relationship building. You can get stuck in your career.
Yeah, that's a great point. And let's be honest too. It is one of our basic human needs to connect with people. And as much as we enjoy the Zoom calls and the phone calls and the FaceTimes and all those things, those aren't real connections. It's two-dimensional. It's not meeting the need the way that it needs. I don't feel the frequency of Gina here today. I don't feel her energy, you know, radiating.
You don't feel my energy? What?
No, you did a great job bringing the energy. Like you made me have the energy. Like you influenced me to have the energy, but I can't feel your energy, you know?
Yeah.
But the idea is we need that connection. And so, you know, half of the burnout process is that people aren't taking the time to look at their needs. What are your needs? You said values, which is a beautiful place, but your needs, your basic needs are growth and variety and connection and love. These are important for us. And so I think that awareness and listen, so let's be honest too. Sometimes change is important. You know, we believe that three ways to change your identity, and it's conditioning, which is constant repetition, doing things over and over again, commitment and consistency. It's how you smoke a pack of cigarettes today. You didn't start smoking a pack a day. You went one at a time. And it's the same way you get healthy. You don't do it overnight. You do it a little bit every day. There's also significant emotional events. There's these, you know, shifts in the industry, shifts in our lives that make us, you know, react and respond and never be the same again. Mm-hmm. But then there's also environment. And it's a very powerful mover. And sometimes it's forced, you know, like as in mass layoffs and things like that. And other times, you know, as an executive, you've earned your opportunity to change your environment and to change your outcome and to change your look and your experience of life. And I think that's a huge value. And to be able to look at that opportunity as a way to redefine yourself. What better place and person to work with than you, Gina? I mean, I really, absolutely. I love your energy. I love your expertise, but I also truly love that your core social psychology beliefs that are human nature. So, thank you so much for taking some time with us today. So we've got a lot of executives that follow us. We've also got a lot of salespeople. So if we've got some executives that are looking to or interested in transitioning or in a transition, how do they find you, Gina?
Oh, it's easy. It's GinaRileyConsulting.com. I actually have a free resource at the top of the page. They can download a free webinar, comes with a workbook, and they can make a career transition plan. It follows my program, but it's my way of sharing with anybody who needs a plan, a way to do it, even if you can't hire a coach. So it makes me feel really good that I have something out there like that. And then I have a lot of articles that I've written on my articles page. And I've talked to a lot of, I've interviewed executives who are in transition who use the power of networking to get their jobs. So I have at least 7 articles with senior leaders explaining their story, exactly how they did it. Pretty cool. And then LinkedIn is always a great, I don't hang out on most of the social channels. I'm on LinkedIn. I post regularly. And I always recommend to anybody on LinkedIn, when you connect, send a personalized connection request and let people know why. Hey, I heard you on a podcast. Hey, I saw an article that you wrote, something like that. And here's why, especially if you have this in your headline, I help people through blah, blah, blah sales. You know, people immediately have a reaction like, oh, you want to help me do something. So overcome the headline that you might have with a personalized touch saying, I'm not selling you something. I saw an article you wrote. It was helpful. Thank you. Want to connect.
I absolutely love it. Value leads, money follows. That's why she gives away her work for free. And if you want the support to do it better and faster and more abundantly with the support of somebody, then you've got Gina there. I love that, Gina. And for all y'all, this is a prospecting tip 101. Prospecting is the same as looking for a job hire, is the same for anything else. Reach out to engage first, all right? Reach out to interest somebody first, then engage, then later on, once you've built a relationship and you've got engagement, then ask for that second date. You know, don't go for it all on the first date, y'all. I mean,
Right. I just piggybacking off that. One of the things that I think people make a mistake is, hey, I'm looking for a job and here's my resume. How many times does the person on the other end actually even open it? Because what are they doing? They're working their tails off doing their own job. They're not going to stop, actually read your resume, actually figure out where you fit when they don't know you. and then somehow pass that along without knowing and liking and trusting you in the first place. So keep that in mind, build the relationship, just like you said.
Absolutely. And we also had, and on the other side of the coin, don't just send it out there. If you put some time into that note and said, hey, I've been following you for a while. Your company is amazing. I've been wanting to work from you since day one. I know you're the founder. I know what you do. If you can give me a chance to work, I promise I won't let you down. I've seen Will from Lavender share a message from one of the people that reached out to him for a job. And he said, there's no way I'm not going to find a job for this person. And how can you do that? How can you have the confidence to do that? It's by taking the time to align your beliefs, to know your values. And so even if you're not ready to transition right now, go through the process to have this confidence to know where you are. And then to go, hey, am I in the right place for this person that I am today? Or maybe is it time to walk away? Or if it's not time to walk away, at least I know I have the confidence I could do so. You know, so Gina, I really love it. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today. I'm coming to you for UMAPS, I think. And I think something else you said I had UMAPS.
You and I should do one together.
I would love that. I think so. I think it would be great. Let's do that. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for being here. You know what to do. Like, comment, and subscribe. Give us all those stars because you know Gina rocked it. And make sure you find Gina. We're on Leads to Growth, the National Association of Sales Professionals. And for all you salespeople and sales leaders out there, get certified. We'll see you in the next one, y'all. Cheers.